Hello, I'm Sam, and this is Pilgrim Pit Stop. It's a podcast about following Jesus through life's highs and lows. And there's a new episode every other Friday, so I would really love it if you hit subscribe and tell your friends about it as well, if you enjoy what you hear. Here's a little clip of what's coming up today.
God has created us out of love, and so we are already beloved before we do the first thing.
All right, let's go. Hello, welcome to episode 11 of Pilgrim Pit Stop. Really excited to have you here for this one. This is a really fantastic conversation that I had with an amazing woman a few weeks ago on the 25th of May 2020. She is a preacher, she's a writer, an artist and a public speaker. And from 2005 until 2011, she was the executive director of the Tutu Institute for Prayer and Pilgrimage. And before that, she worked to provide educational opportunities for Black South Africans and Southern African refugees. She is, of course, the daughter of Desmond Tutu, and she co-wrote the authorized biography of her father in 2011. And she's also written two books with Desmond Tutu. She has written Made for Goodness, which came out in 2010, and more recently, The Book of Forgiving, that came out in 2014. And forgiveness is something we really talk about at some length in this conversation that you're about to hear.
Let's make a start. So it is my absolute privilege and honour to now be joined by Mpol Tutu van Furth. Mpol, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm always really interested talking to fellow believers about their walks with God, kind of the different times in their life where God has been there. And I'm interested to really start this conversation in the past with your childhood. So I'd be fascinated to hear from you. How was God a part of your life as a child and as a teenager?
As a child, I was the child of a clergy person, and so church was very much a part of my life, and was very much my family and my community. We moved a lot during my childhood. I was born in the UK while my dad was studying there, and then moved back to South Africa, and my father was teaching, and to Lesotho, where my father was also teaching, and then back to the UK again, and back to South Africa again. And all of those were very much with church roles or church community roles. And so the church congregation really was my family. And each time I moved into an existing family, an existing community. I hadn't had the experience of moving and having to make my own community in a way until university. And then it was just a matter of finding the local university chaplain, and that kind of became my anchoring community while I was in varsity as well. So I felt, growing up, very much that God was present and part of my life, and had that exemplified in the faith family of which I was very much a part.
Was there a point in your life where you felt that personal relationship with God came alive, or was that always there from as long as you can remember?
I think it was always there as long as I can remember. I mean, I don't ever remember a time in my life of feeling that God didn't exist, or that I had to, create or frame a relationship with God I don't at all have an experience of not having an experience of God.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear, because as I kind of read about your life and your father's life and the work of your family, there's this word that seems to keep on coming up, which, correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether that word has been significant in your understanding of God and community as well.
So Ubuntu is what we call the essence of humanity, the core of humanity, what it actually means to be human. And it is a word that I don't think it was a word that was very present in our lives as a word. It was present in our lives as an experience. And it has only been over the past number of years that a word is assigned to the way that we experience living and being in community and being in family.
And was that kind of community and shared humanity a big part of life in your house as you were growing up?
For a person who has grown up in a family, the way that your family does things is the way that things are done.
Yeah. it's just as it is, I guess, isn't it?
Right. And so our as it is was an as it is that was always concerned with those around us.
I'm interested as well to hear from you whether some of the more difficult times in life have taught you anything about the character of God.
The character of God is very much a character of presence. For me, God is a God who shows up. And a God who most often shows up in the form and shape of other people. I remember once reading once in those pre-Christmas lections, reading about the Annunciation and the angel greets Mary, and Mary's response isn't, "Oh my gosh, who are you? What kind of a being is this?" Mary's response is, "What kind of a greeting is this?" And it made me consider that. An angel isn't a specific being, but is rather a messenger of God. And God can send us messengers in any form, even in the most banal forms, the most common of forms. The person next door can be really an angel for you, can be the person who God has sent to you with the message that God wants to convey to you. And in the most difficult times, I have encountered so many angels.
I'm interested now to sort of turn to some of your work that you've done. You've worked in lots of different contexts, and one of the things that you did was you were executive director of the Tutu Institute for Prayer and Pilgrimage. And you know, as you can tell from the name of this podcast, I'm a big fan of pilgrimage. I think it's great. Why do you think pilgrimage is an important or useful practice for Christians?
So one of the gifts of pilgrimage, there's several. One of them is giving us the opportunity to learn to be useless, and the reason that we need to learn to be useless is that so very often we are consumed with, without recognizing it necessarily, but we're consumed with trying to justify our existence. You know, that if we do enough or create enough or make enough or that if we're able to do all of those things, then we have a right to be alive. We're worthy of taking up space on the planet, and therefore are worthy of God's love. And actually, we have it upside down. That God has created us out of love, and so we are already beloved before we do the first thing. Before we draw a breath, we have already justified our existence because God has brought us into existence. And that when we work from the warped perspective from which we so often work, that we have to justify our existence, we can become both driven and in a way cruel and diminished and mean. There is something, yeah, maybe parsimonious about a workaholic. And when it lands with us, when it actually kind of gets into our bones and sinks under our skin, that we are beloved before we do the first thing, then our response can also be a response of love. And the response of love is to want to offer the beloved the best of ourselves. Not because we are fearful of punishment, but because the smallest iota of delight on behalf of our beloved is worth every ounce of effort that we make to gain it. We know that in our human relationships. We know from the experience of falling in love with our human lovers that, you know, I'll pick daisies and dandelions for you. I'll hike half my way across the Sahara in stiletto heels if that would make you smile.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and that when the drive is love, then the creative possibilities are endless. When the drive is fear, then you do enough to assuage the fear, and then you do no more. You have you're not working out of joyful desire, you're working out of joyless necessity.
Right.
You're doing what you do out of a joyless necessity, and there's no life in that. And I think one of the things that you see or maybe you don't see, but as you look around the globe now in this COVID time and the panic about we must restart our economies. The panic about restarting our economies isn't a fear that people will not have enough. The fear is for profit. The fear isn't for people. We actually have in the world right now enough and more than enough to ensure that every single person is clothed and fed and housed through months of lockdown, actually, if that was what we wanted to have happen. If that was our commitment, if our commitment was every person on the planet should be clothed, fed, housed, and receive medical care if they need it, we could do that. The question isn't the capability, the question is one of desire. What do we want to do? What actually do we think is important enough to do? I mean, you can even see it in, how many decades of Earth Days have we gone through? How many years and conferences on climate change have we convened? How many symposia have we had saying we have to change our way of doing life because the climate is in peril, our planet is in peril? And we said, well, no, we can't, and maybe in 40 years we can do this, and in 85 years maybe so and so will happen. And then suddenly here comes a deadly pandemic and we shut it down in an instant. And, you know, it's exactly the demonstration and illustration that, yeah, it's not a lack of capability. It is a lack of determination and desire.
And maybe a lack of not being governed by, well, no, I think you answered that brilliantly. But I think, yeah, a lack maybe of being guided by love, and governments not putting love at the center of their policy making. Maybe that is the essence of that. And if it was a true love of humanity that was reflected in our systems of government, maybe we would be living in a completely different sort of paradigm. And is what you're saying, that pilgrimage is a useful and not even a useful, an essential way of actually unlocking that love that we all carry within us?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in a way, this corona time is a time of pilgrimage. It is a time of being able to step back and consider the ways that we order our lives. On pilgrimage, you take a step out of time, you take a step out of your usual routine. You move into a different way of being, and you usually travel, and you travel to to touch the relics, to visit the holy places. And one of the things that the COVID pilgrimage reminds us is that home is also a holy place. Mm. It is also that home is not always an ideal place. But that home is a sacred place. It is a place that is set apart.
You have, obviously, you've written a lot about forgiveness, and you've lived it out in various ways through your life. And you have a really, I think, beautiful way of articulating the journey or the pilgrimage through forgiveness, the different stages, the difficulties of each stage, the kind of the realities of each stage, but then also the sort of the destination, I guess, the hope that comes from forgiveness and for offering forgiveness and accepting forgiveness. Why do you think forgiveness is so hard for us as people?
Well, I think one of the reasons that forgiveness is hard is that it is maybe misconstructed, that we have the notion of forgiveness is one of, I am giving the perpetrator something, they get away scot-free. And the reality is that even though it looks on the face of it as though you are giving the perpetrator something, ultimately what it is that you're giving something to yourself. You're giving yourself a kind of liberation from the tentacles of pain and grief that the perpetrator has sunk into you. So the first thing that is really hard about forgiveness is recognizing that forgiveness isn't something you do for someone else. It's something that you do for yourself.
And is that almost the first thing to acknowledge in the process of forgiveness?
It would be nice if it were the first thing to acknowledge. You maybe discover it along the way.
Right.
That as you get free of the venom of anger and hatred, that actually you're the one who has made the biggest gain. And just taking forgiveness as being, as saying, okay, I no longer reserve the right to exact revenge on you for what you have done. And I no longer define you solely by that worst thing that you have done to me. And that seems like a good working definition. Until we, unless we come up with something better. But having taken that as a working definition, that you start even there to recognize that, okay, if I am not looking to exact revenge, that frees up a whole lot of space in my head and in my heart from things that are much more fun to do.
Yeah. It's quite countercultural, really, isn't it? If you just hearing you speaking there, I think because everything in the world would want the idea of retribution. You know, if someone's done something bad, they deserve to be punished. And what you're describing is the complete opposite of that.
Maybe, but it's also very self-interested.
Yeah.
And an enlightened kind of self-interest but a self-interest nonetheless. You know, this is how you get to have space in your head for what you actually love and enjoy, as opposed to giving free real estate in your head to somebody who has done you harm.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think also one of the things that does make forgiveness a challenge is that so often we hear a should attached to it. You should forgive. And I think that should is a very unhelpful attachment to forgiveness. Forgiveness is an invitation. God extends an invitation to you to forgive, and not a demand on you to do so. Mm. And then kind of when you walk through the process of forgiveness, of what it actually takes to forgive, it does take reckoning with what has happened and with the pain that you have experienced and with the real story of what is to be forgiven. Yeah. You have to have a real grasp on the injury to be able to offer real forgiveness.
Yeah, I was watching some clips actually the other day from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and I guess that's what you're describing there, is that telling the story, that initial stage, and just how powerful those testimonies were and still are, actually, to watch them now, and just to see the telling of the story, letting that just be in existence is a very powerful thing, and I guess is that first step towards reconciliation.
As potent and powerful as the experience was in the TRC, it is only a quantum of difference. It is not qualitatively different from what needs to happen in the most mundane everyday experiences of asking for and offering forgiveness. I mean, even in your personal relationships, the process for forgiving, whether you notice it or not, is the same. And so it is always needing to tell the story. So what is it that needs to be forgiven? And telling the story fully. So, you know, I know that in intimate partner relationships, very often one partner has hurt the other for some reason. You know, they find it actually also difficult to name, okay, why am I not done? You've said you're sorry and that you were wrong, but I still feel as though there's something missing. And the something missing is I didn't get to tell my story or name my hurt or actually engage the full process.
And I guess that is a reality that we're all living with at the moment, as we're on lockdown with those closest to us. Naturally, that's going to bring to the surface tensions and things that need to be addressed, I guess. But I guess within that, there is a place for forgiveness, which is the hope of this time, is that actually there will be maybe reconciled relationships.
In our daily lives, there's a daily need for forgiveness. If we live with each other with any degree of honesty, we have every day the need to forgive one another.
terms of this pandemic, is there anything in particular that you're learning about following Jesus through this really odd moment of history that we're living through?
I am learning more and more how much following Jesus is a communal activity, that the journey of following Jesus isn't a journey to be undertaken alone. Yeah, following Jesus is a communal activity. This, you know, our Christianity isn't a soloistic religion. You know, even the desert mothers and fathers who went off into the wilderness to confirm and deepen their faith and to live more closely with God, gained wisdom from being part of communities. What I'm seeing with so much of the online churches, online worship, you know, the communities that have come to life online as worshiping communities, that there is a gift in this COVID time of learning to walk more closely with Jesus by learning to walk together.
Are there any kind of spiritual practices or rhythms of prayer that you're finding useful at this time?
Yeah, I've been doing a couple of things. One is joining a Facebook Live community called One Boat Chaplaincy. And I offer a reflection there once every 2 weeks. And there's a variety of people who offer reflections or prayers or meditations every day, every morning. And that's on Facebook Live. And then I have been having an online Bible study once a week via Zoom with a small community of friends. And then there's a lot of Christian communities really coming to life in, you know, across continents and via the web, and they really have deepened and enriched my practice. I now also have a weekly Zoom congregation that meets for a Sunday Eucharist, and where 4 or 5 nations and 3 continents, the desire to be worshiping community is very much alive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it, how churches have adapted, I think, quite quickly and quite well in many ways to this new way of doing things.
I know that many Christian communities gathering in person is very much a need and a practice, and if it's not in person, it's not legitimate. But you know, I always am reminded that, you know, the Spirit moves where she will. You know, she's not confined to the buildings that we create for her.
And just finally, Paul, I'm interested, has God been speaking to you through any particular scripture over the last few weeks?
Well, I've been doing over the last few weeks a lot of the um, of of Bible study with John's Gospel, which is not ordinarily my favorite gospel, but it is, you know, it is what has shown up in the lectionary at this time. And I'm really, you know, just grateful for the insights that gospel offers, or offers us, being inside outsiders of, and the assurance that is in that gospel of God's presence with us at all times, in all circumstances. That is what I have found myself walking with and working with over the past several weeks.
Are you studying that in your community?
Yes, it's so in my tradition, we work with a lectionary, and whatever's on the lectionary is what shows up. And it is the Bible study that I offer is a lectionary-based Bible study. And so I've really been deepening my encounter with God through John's Gospel and with Jesus, where the past several weeks have been in that, John's farewell discourse. So that long, Jesus' long goodbye to his disciples, as he prepares for the crucifixion. But we read it, you know, both pre and post Easter, and you know, now very much as we move towards Pentecost and the birthday of the church, this assurance of God present and the Holy Spirit with us, and that God is not far away and out of our reach, but is intimately present in all of the moments of our lives.
Yeah, including the lockdown.
Including the lockdown, yes.
Paul, I really appreciate you coming on this podcast. I've really been blessed by this conversation. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Go. That's the conversation that I had with Paul Tutu van Furth. So thankful to her for coming on this podcast and sharing so wisely and with so much grace. So thank you, Paul. I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. It's great to have you on this journey with me. As you know, I'm sort of developing this podcast. Lots of different ideas about ways that it can go, and it's great to have a group of you on this journey with me. So many thanks, as always, to Johnny Davies for creating the theme music, and to my brother Thomas Thorogood for making the jingles. I'd love it if you hit subscribe. And please do share this with others if you've enjoyed what you've heard. We have a new episode every other Friday that comes out. So I put out another episode. There's no real team behind this at this point. It's great to have you here. And I hope you have a really blessed week. Yeah, okay. God bless.